Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is My Wardrobe Malfunction, the podcast all about clothes, but not in the way you might imagine. This is our 20th Zoom episode and was recorded in August 2020. If you haven't heard the others, what are you waiting for? We've had some incredible guests. You can find them all as podcasts or videos at mywardmal.com, where you can also see our pyjama party and join us by emailing your own clothing tales or anything else you fancy to help@mywardmal.com. Finally, please do subscribe, rate and review, and follow us on the usual socials at mywardmal. Right, on to today's special guest, someone I've admired for some time and been dying to speak to in person. It's principal dancer of the Royal Ballet, actress and fashion fanatic, Francesca Haywood. So, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. Oh my goodness, so there's a few, actually there aren't many things I'm obsessed with, but I am obsessed with ballet, and today I am with, I can't quite believe it, Francesca. Is it Frankie or Francesca?
Professionally, I like to be Francesca, but you call me Frankie. I like Frankie. Frankie. Yeah, everyone calls me Frankie, yeah.
I mean, I can't believe you are so young and you are a principal ballerina at the Royal Opera House for the Royal Ballet.
Yes, yeah, that happened, I don't know, like 3 years ago or something. I mean, this year doesn't really count, but
yeah.
So
you were how old, Frankie, when you became principal dancer?
I'm super bad at maths, but I think I was promoted into 2016, so and I'm 28
okay.
now.
Okay, so. And so can you be like Margot Fonteyn, do you think, and go on until you're 90? I mean, I know she wasn't 90, but she was pretty ancient, wasn't she?
I mean, honestly, I think there are so many more dancers now that are dancing much later than is normal, because obviously our career is normally sort of like similar to like a footballer's, probably like mid-30s, 40s, you need to see how your body's feeling. I mean, I have so much respect for the dancers that are still dancing in their 50s now, but like, I'm not sure I'm cut out for that. I don't know. I feel like when I'm hobbling into the studio, I'm like, I'm not sure if I can keep doing this for like another 30 years, but we'll see.
Because the training is, from what I've seen, the training is more insane than being an Olympian. You've put yourselves through so much pain and it is relentless, isn't it?
I mean, I think also in lockdown, what I've really been doing is watching a lot of old Olympics videos.
Okay.
It's been really fascinating. Yeah, like watching like, I don't know, like the running, the diving.
Yeah.
So obviously I have like so much respect. I have so much respect for the athletes and everything. But then it's also like I've been comparing what I do as well. And I mean, it's impossible, obviously, to like they get points, you know, and it's about winning or losing. And I feel with my art form, there's just so much more to it. It's not as simple as that. But I say the biggest difference is just probably like we're always doing shows. So it's like those athletes have like one race in mind and they train for that one race, which is similar. But there's, you know, I'll have a show on Monday and then I'll be rehearsing all day Tuesday, like three other different ballets, and then might have to get up and do a completely different ballet on Wednesday. You know what I mean? So it's like the rest time and the recovery that it's like trying to figure out how to do that and still be in this like tip-top like race condition, you know what I mean? It's like
I can imagine. Yeah,
yeah.
But have you in lockdown you've done a few live performances, obviously not in front of an audience but for the Royal Opera House, and I mean, how have you trained? Have you been able to get to a studio?
No, so I started off in my tiny little flat in central London. It was me and my boyfriend doing class in the same room, and it was just impossible. It was like every time I lifted my leg, we were both touching legs and kicking each other, and just, it was like impossible. I was like on week one, I was like, I don't know how long this is gonna last, but I don't think I can do this. So yeah, we are very, very lucky. We have a yoga studio that's we've been given the keys to downstairs, so they're not using the yoga studio. So yeah, we luckily like had to buy a ballet bar, which I've never had to do in my life. So I had to fork out a couple of £100. They're expensive.
Install it.
Yeah, actually that was the easy bit. It was super easy to do even for me. But yeah, no, everyone was just holding on to kitchen counters, chairs, which is kind of sweet in a way, because it's like ballet dancers aren't very glamorous people. Like, we travel a lot. We literally do use like whatever we can find most of the time. We don't expect, luxury and perfect conditions and lots of equipment, but it kind of like took everyone right back to basics. It was like, like when you start out doing ballet, I used to use the armchair in the living room and pretend it was like my partner behind me, watching a video of Margot Fonteyn and Rudolf Nureyev, and then the chair would be like holding me up in an arabesque, and I'd be there. So it kind of reminded me of going back to those kind of days.
Oh, that's so sweet. And when you were watching all the athletes and old Olympics, was there anything that you could take out from what they were doing, or have you watched some training that you could adapt to staying fit for ballet?
Honestly, I'm a firm believer that no matter like how much gym you do, you can do all sorts of other things, Pilates, like nothing really prepares you for being in ballet condition apart from just doing more ballet.
Yeah.
But obviously, obviously it's going to help. But I think what I love to see was more the zone, the way they get into the zone, like their mindset, like how they were handling any setbacks, you know what I mean? Like all that, I find the like psychological side of watching them very fascinating, and quite similar too. But I generally think that I would love for ballet dancers to start working more with athletes, with other kinds of dancers. Like I have some friends that do like amazing, like I have a friend who can just do like a crazy backflip. He can just be stood talking to you like this, and then he'll just do a backflip all the way around with no preparation. And that's something that as spectacular as ballet is, when the men are about to do one of their biggest tricks, they do this like enormous sort of like run into it. And I was thinking how amazing if we could combine the two things, if we could learn from each other a bit more, and like we could push ballet even further like that.
Yeah. So is that something that you're getting more involved in? Because I can imagine, in a way, I mean, I don't know, but is it ballet sort of hasn't really, it's not that it hasn't evolved. I mean, obviously there's modern ballet and there's the different types of ballet, but in terms of training, it's probably the same as it's always been, isn't it? Whereas, in sport, it's evolved and you've got various different bits of machinery and like you say, the kind of mental approach. Ballet's sort of always been the same, hasn't it?
Yeah, I have to say it's one of those things that we have to push it further in other ways, but you really can't, it like has to kind of stay as what it is. And
yeah, especially
like we have so much more like sports science, obviously. Like we have an amazing healthcare suite at the Royal Ballet and everything, and you can do all that stuff and it can improve you, but I think honestly there's with ballet, like the good old fashioned approach is like the best way, to be honest.
And so I mean you must be, most days you're just in sweats or a little mini tutu or leggings, or I mean, don't you get frustrated by having to wear that every day? Do you miss dressing up? Because I think you're someone who loves fashion and loves clothes.
I do. So I've always thought this is really funny because I love fashion. I'm constantly buying things and then I just wear the same thing literally every single day. Like, that's not a joke. I just wear just like baggy black trousers. I'm always in trainers, obviously, because I don't want to wear uncomfortable shoes before I start my day in pointe shoes. Like just baggy things that I'm going to take off super quick, and then I'll get into like my leotard and really unattractive like tracksuit bottoms that I actually found for €5 in there was like a Woolworths in Germany. I was doing a show there and they lost my suitcase, and I bought these. I went into the Woolworths and bought these like pretty just standard, pretty hideous €5 tracksuit bottoms, men's ones, and I love them. I wear them literally every single day. Like, they actually have a hole in them and I have to sew them up soon.
But I think, I guess when you're, you know, when you're performing, there's so much goes into the preparation in terms of the costumes and the makeup, and you're there and you're playing a role. For you to then just go, oh, those spring on those sweatpants must be a relief. I can see that.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, yeah. Also, I think also because I'm small, I'm very small, I'm 5 foot
How
two.
How tall are you?
Tiny. So I think because I'm small, yeah, I think because I'm small and I'm a ballerina, everyone expects me to, like, want to wear cute stuff or, like, wear pink and stuff like that. And I think subconsciously that's something I've always tried to be, like, very far away from.
Yeah.
And so I love to wear big baggy black things in my spare time because I guess I get to do the whole, like, princess tiara, yeah, tutu. I can try all kinds of crazy things on stage and have my moment, yeah, looking cute, and then go back to being a bit more real.
So where do you get your clothes from? Where do you shop mainly?
I actually have, you know, near to a shopping problem. At least, like, I'm just constantly on my phone. Like, I'm always
online.
Clothes, always.
Online.
I do love to be in the shop, don't get me wrong, I love, but I just, yeah, don't get that time a lot.
Yeah. No, I totally hear you. I'm constantly looking. Basically, you're someone who wears, like, 10% of her wardrobe 90% of the time.
Absolutely, yeah. My wardrobe is literally, it's kind of, it's pretty funny, actually. It's just literally, if you look at it, it's all black, pretty much. This is a rare day where I'm wearing colour shirt, blue shirt.
Colour.
Literally, if I'm wearing something other than black, all my friends will comment on it. But it's literally just black boots, like chunky black boots, sort of not tight black trousers, jeans. And then, yeah, just like a black cashmere jumper. And I have this amazing, like, big oversized coat that I wear in winter. And that's me done, really.
That's it. But don't you just, yeah, is there any look that you would long to adopt, that you'd love, and you look and you think, oh God, yeah, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna wear that, and then you can't be bothered. But is there something that you'd love to, or someone that you'd love to dress like?
I think I do, like, I'm really drawn to the like laid back, didn't really try look. So I don't often look at girls that have really made an effort and think, I wish I looked like that. I look at them and think, oh, they look amazing, but I know I'll never make that effort. And I've come to realise that I can't keep complaining about, oh, I hate my hair, or I hate this outfit, if I'm not making an effort.
Yeah.
Like, what can you do?
But it's like, it's the Scandinavian girls. I love the way, it's like my daughters, they follow a couple of girls from Sweden or Norway, I can't remember which, and they've got that kind of real effortless, yeah, cool. So they'll wear something, they'll just wear, you know, really shitty old sweatpants, but then they'll wear them with a pair of Gucci loafers or something, so it's very, yeah, laid back. And then they'll have a cool little beanie and then some great earrings, and it is, I think I agree with you, the kind of the thing that I aspire to as well is to look good with, as though I haven't made any effort whatsoever, which is quite hard to pull off.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to make more of an effort, just making it look like my face is washed and everything, and like clean, and like I don't wear a lot of makeup, but just making me look like a fresh version of myself. And then, yeah, then I like to look like I just chuck something on, which I probably did. but yeah, even if I go out, like I remember going out for the first time in Liverpool, like when I was about 18, and I'd be going out in London before that. And obviously, everyone in London, that, again, it's the goal is to look like you didn't really try and, yeah, you didn't make an effort, because that's cool. So, I went to Liverpool, and these girls, I couldn't believe how much they started. I was sort of around town on Friday afternoon, and they'd already started doing like their hair in rollers, and they're walking around doing their like errands with their hair in rollers, preparing for Friday night, like going out. You know, it's serious. And then I was out, and I was there in my jeans with a pair of heels. I basically was wearing what I wore in the day, and then I just put like a pair of heels on, and they were just looking at me with pity, like, is she okay? It was like two different cultures, like two different tribes. Also, another thing I like to do is put on big earrings. That's like my
thing
that said, yeah, I made an effort today somehow. So yeah. I'm normally wearing gold. I love gold jewelry. So yeah.
Yeah, well, gold is really good good for your skin tone. And black, you're lucky that you can wear black and look good in it. But do you find it quite hard to find clothes because you are very petite and I imagine, you know, teeny tiny skinny and because you're so fit?
Yes, I have to have pretty much everything altered, especially trousers. Trousers is like the holy grail to find something that I put on first time and it's the right length.
So if you could change, Frankie, one thing about your body, what would it be?
Well, I definitely have a smaller chest for about, you know, I'm a ballerina, so that's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
But I think I'm okay with it. I'm making my peace with it. It's okay.
Yeah.
But I'd probably say I just always like dancers. I think this is a thing for dance everywhere. Just longer, like slimmer legs always. I'm not saying they're huge. I'm not saying they're huge, but always I would just love that, like as lengthy as possible because I have quite muscly, quite muscly thighs. So yeah, if I could streamline myself with a magic wand, that would be amazing.
But then you have to have those thighs, don't you, to have the power to do what you do.
Yeah, I mean, it's my body shape as well, and I have to accept it and love it, and obviously yeah. I'm healthy and happy and all that stuff.
So. Yeah, all that bullshit, but you'd still really like them with thinner legs.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you ever had a bad wardrobe malfunction?
You know what, I always, if I tend to push the boat out and wear something, like on an evening out, like I just hate when I'm fiddling with something. And that's usually if something's like a V-neck, I'm always worried, like, you know, I haven't got the chest to fill something out. But if I reach, you know, for something, I'm just constantly thinking, oh, someone see my nipple or something. So I hate those moments. Mm. But to be honest, I've had more of those moments on stage. Like I have genuinely been on stage. Well, like my costume broke like the second before I went on stage, or I just came on, did like the first thing, and I just felt something go, and I could just feel the air on my chest, and I was like, no, this is not good.
No,
I was dancing with lots of, yeah, I mean, obviously it's not big dramatic, and I was dancing with all the men first. They had to like lift me and pass me, you know, between them, and I'm like this goddess like creature in a show, a big show. Like one of my first shows of this big ballet called Rhapsody. And I remember just knowing and just trying to keep eye contact with everyone.
Yeah.
Stuff was probably showing, but I couldn't look down on stage and check either. So, but, you know, and just having to like not let it affect my, you know, the steps and stuff.
The
and then
show.
I ran off stage and it was one of those things where it's exhausting. So every time you get a moment in the wings, you just want to be relaxing. And it was like the only time I got to relax. And instead I have like three costume people trying to put a safety pin on it, which is also super dangerous because I was about to do a pas de deux. And I was thinking, oh my God, we could get caught. I could prick him with the safety pin, like all kinds of things. So I think I forgot about it until after the show. And I was like, oh, it's a miracle. Nothing happened. No more drama. And then I said to my partner, did anything? Are your fingers okay and everything? He's like, yeah, fine. I was like, well, that was a miracle. So
I can't, I mean, how you manage to go on doing something like that, because in ballet it's not just memory, but it's the acting and it's the taking on that role and trying to translate so much. It's almost like being a mime artist, isn't it?
Yeah, and I do think that the audience, they sniff fear. They're like, you know, they sniff when you seem unsure. If I had like a panicky moment, I'm sure they would have been able to tell. So like part of the skill is just everything's always fine. Everything's always fine.
Yeah.
So that everyone can relax and enjoy it, even if it's chaos inside your head.
But that must take a certain amount of maturity to get to that stage. I mean, there must be younger dancers who find that kind of thing quite difficult. If something happens, which it must do a lot, like you forget a step or you go in the wrong direction or I don't know, that must be part of, to have that kind of mental dedication and strength must come with maturity.
I think it's something you are kind of more like that as a person or not to start with, and then the job teaches you to kind of, you know, really, I think I'm always, everyone always tells me I'm really chilled, which is funny because I don't always feel very chilled, but in moments of crisis, I think I am able to do the opposite of panic somehow.
Yeah.
I think it's called denial. I think it's denial, actually. I don't know.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But it's kind of like, I guess to be principal is more than just physically, obviously you've got to have the physical talent and the gift, but it's a holistic set of attributes. It's the flexibility, it's being able to act, it's being, I think beauty is important for a ballet dancer. And grace, and then mental strength. I suppose you've got to have all these things.
I think the mental strength is something that isn't spoken about enough, like definitely obviously all the other things, but I think honestly you literally won't make it as a dancer no matter how good you are if you haven't got a sound mind or you're able to be resilient or just to adapt and just be stronger in your mind, definitely. And it's funny, I do a lot of, and this is not me sort of boasting about myself. I'm not boasting about me personally. I'm sort of talking about, I suppose, like what ballet training gives you. So even dancers who haven't become professional, but sort of did the whole 8 years at ballet school, and they obviously have to go back in terms of academics, but and it's something that I am told if I do jobs sort of, for example, I did a video underwater, like I had to be in a water tank and I'm a bad swimmer. But I had to be able to hold my breath, go down, do the choreography, and then make a signal to say I was ready to be, like, shot back to the surface by a free diver who was there to help me. Sort of jobs like that, and even just doing, like, sort of, you know, modelling jewellery on a photo shoot set kind of thing. Everyone always talks about the fact that, for all dancers, not just me, that we don't complain, that we sort of just kept going for the whole day, that our general stamina, mental and physical, is just sort of surpasses that of, you know, the usual candidates they choose for the job, like an actual, you know, diver or a model, you know. So like, well, that's just ballet training, I think. It's kind of military almost.
Brutal. It's brutal, isn't it? Frankie, you were on the cover of Vogue, weren't you, as well? So, I mean, that must have been, for someone who loves fashion and beauty and everything, that must have been one of the most amazing moments for you.
That was incredible. That was when they made that phone call to say, Edward would like you to be on the cover of Vogue. I was thinking, just needed about 10 minutes just to process. It was amazing. Yeah, it was just still, I mean,
who took the photos?
Peter Lindbergh. So yeah, he sadly died months after. So I feel so fortunate to have met him. He was amazing. I remember kind of telling everyone about him after the shoot because, I don't know, he was one of the first people I met, and he just came down whilst I was having my makeup done, and he was just so normal, and you expect, you know, someone who's that iconic in the fashion industry, and he was just wearing, like, you know, sweet little like combat trousers, and he just had his camera, and he was showing everyone the pictures he'd taken of Greta Thunberg the week before, and you could just see the way he was showing his work. It wasn't with any he was just so like passionate about it in such a humble way, and he was saying, look, I think I managed to capture her smile there, I managed to get her there, like, and seeing that and the way he was talking to everyone, I was really touched and then really devastated to hear that he'd gone. But
he really took some iconic shots, because he was so good at the almost like his outdoor shots were almost like reportage, but they were so beautiful. They were staged, but they were so natural. And then the studio shots, he was really an amazing man. I heard some amazing things about him too. Were you in Cats, that film?
Yes, I was, yeah.
How was that? Is that something you want to do more of, acting?
I think so, yeah, definitely. I think I need to, obviously it needs to be like the right project, and I have to take such a lot of time off from the Royal Ballet, so obviously it was
hard for
yeah,
you.
It was hard, definitely, but yeah, I would love to. I found it fascinating, like, I loved it, but in a very different way. I missed the live performances when I was there on the film set. Like, I missed the feeling of performing live, but I mean, my career as a dancer may be short, touch wood, it goes on hopefully quite a bit longer.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like it's a lovely thing. I hopefully can balance for a bit and then maybe focus on, if I'm lucky, like a bit further down the line when I'm, you know, my body is getting a bit tired.
No, it's not. You've got to keep going until there's live performances again and I can come and watch you. You've got to keep going, woman.
Yeah, I think actually, honestly, the next thing, obviously, apart from I love the acting side of ballet as well. That's what I love. So definitely acting. But fashion is genuinely has always been the only other thing that kind of ignites that kind of, you know, like fire in me. And I don't know, I'm hesitant because I know that when you're in the fashion world, it's a very different thing from being like a happy observer or someone who, I love the where I am with it right now. I feel like I'm sort of inside it enough to get some sort of, you know, as a fashion fan sort of thing, I see how it works and I've met people and, you know, going to the fashion shows and all this amazing stuff. But I know that once you sort of cross the line further, it becomes a very different thing. So yeah, I think it's something to think about.
But so do you think maybe like styling or which side or designing or what kind of ignites you the most?
I was thinking in lockdown of trying to do some kind of course on, I don't even know how you start though with designing, you know, like could I even, you know, to draw even the figures to start, you know, whipping up some creative. I mean, I can't sew, so that's not very good. So I can only sew ballet shoes. That's literally like,
maybe you could be a cobbler. You could be a cobbler, design shoes.
Can you imagine? My second career is in a tiny shop in London, just mending shoes. Yeah, no, that's definitely something I'd like to think about is like maybe designing. But I think I love styling. I think that's what really excites me. And I not just love shopping for myself, but I love seeing things and I think, oh, that would look amazing on someone else, or I love this, but I wouldn't wear it. I can see it on my friends, or like if I'm doing a shoot, I'm like, oh, what kind of vibe? What would I wear?
Yeah, so you sound like me. I love dressing other people and I hate dressing myself. But it's just so much fun to dress, you know, friends, or when I, you know, in the past when I was like dressing loads of women and stuff, it was so great to the satisfaction and the rewards of literally changing someone's life because they felt so much better about themselves. And it's incredible power clothing has.
I totally agree.
You know, over men and women.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like anyone who tells me, well, I feel like people still have, you know, this idea that fashion is silly, you know, like fashion is trivial, and I totally disagree. I think it's art. It's like the power. It can literally transform your day. It can transform you. I'm not saying you have to even buy anything spectacular, but even if you just find your style and what suits you, what makes you feel good, that's still, whether that's a pair of, you know, horrible trousers and a t-shirt, if that's what you feel good in, then I believe that, like, how is that trivial at all? And also I love, you know, and you know, everyone says, well, do you have any fashion regrets and things? And obviously, like, I look back at photos of myself and I think, oh my goodness, like, what was that? But I also remember loving being in that at the time. So even though I think it's hideous now, like, I remember having a particularly good day because I remember I loved that top. You know, even back to when I was like 4 or 5, I saw some pictures and I was like, oh, I used to love wearing that t-shirt, you know? Like, so I don't know, that's just, oh, I can't really regret it because I loved it at the time, so.
But it's extraordinary, the kind of emotional memories clothing brings up. So it's, you, like you say, it's so true. So you look at a picture or you look at a dress or an old photograph and or you think, I'll take something out of my wardrobe that's down in the cellar and I'll pick it up. And I feel the emotions that I felt when I last wore it. It's so true that. And they provide a conduit for sort of triggering your memory for good times and bad times. So, yeah, I'm with you. The power of clothing is immense. So, Frankie, where did this love of fashion come from? Was it from your family or was it innate in the same way ballet
My first...
was?
I mean, I suppose my first memories of fashion were probably like from watching films. Like, I used to love like Rear Window and seeing like Grace Kelly in her dresses and just like waltzing into his flat. Yeah. Also, that film's amazing right now. It's very relevant. That's what I feel like is, you know, when he's looking across at the ballerina in her doing her warm up in her living room. I'm like, that's, that's the Neighbours for me.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know that glamorous, but anyway. But yeah, I think the first time, that's sort of my first memories was sort of watching like Audrey Hepburn and probably Grace Kelly and those kinds of things. And then my next one would be my grandma coming back on the train, tubing up to London for the day. We lived in Sussex, near Brighton. Yeah, so I was in the house there and I just remember her coming back in the evening off the train and saying, oh, I thought you might like this. And it was the beginning of The Slippery Slope, which is my addiction to magazines, like absolutely addicted. So yeah, she had Teen Vogue and I just fell in love with it straight away. And then that grew into, even when I was, you know, really young, Vogue, Elle, you know, all of them. And I even have friends who, I don't remember this, but they tell me that at the Royal Ballet School in the evening, we had to do our homework between 7 and 8, like, you know, very quiet, like very serious, you know, like very concentrated, and that I would always have Vogue behind my maths textbook and I'd just be reading Vogue and I'd never do my homework. And then I'd be panicking the next day and asking if I could like copy someone's homework because I was just reading Vogue.
Oh my god.
I mean, also I think my grandma is probably my, without realizing, she's always been sort of like my style icon. I mean, I still pinch all her cardigans. She has the best cardigans in the world. But also she always taught me that literally you can never go wrong if you have a classic pair of denim jeans and a really nice t-shirt. Like, and you're pretty much get away with that for most occasions, you know. Like, I'm someone that tends to dress down rather than dress up, as you probably gathered. But yeah, I always feel uneasy in a situation. I'd hate to be the person that walked in overdressed. I'd rather be slightly embarrassed because I was more casual. But classy.
Yeah, same. Yeah, same. And do you always, like, before you go out, walk out the door, do you always put makeup on? Or do you not bother?
Honestly, I do. I mean, I'm usually sweat most of my makeup off anyway, so there's not much way. But I just put a tiny bit of, like, Touche Flower or something just to, like, you know, make me look a bit less tired. Tiny bit of mascara, tried and tested, so that it doesn't sort of go everywhere. And if I can be bothered, maybe, like, a light foundation, but that's kind of it. That's kind of it for the evening as well. I'm just lazy because I'm too lazy to go to the bathroom and do, you know, the checks and stuff. So even when I think if I do have an opportunity to wear like a bold lip, I never do because I just panic that, you know, I'm not going to apply.
You're going to eat it off.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But you're lucky that you're naturally beautiful and you've got the most amazing skin. So, you know. So, Frankie, you've travelled the globe extensively, I would imagine. And have you got something which is like your comfort blanket that goes with you everywhere?
Quite literal. I have a toy rabbit called Hattie. Like, she's like a teddy bear.
Called Hattie?
Hattie. Like Harriet, but Hattie.
Oh, yeah. Hattie. Okay,
so she's literally, I've had her since I was 2 years old, and she has to be literally like when I say next to me on the plane, it's so that if there was an emergency where, you know, they say you can't grab your bags, or I'm already, I have my passport and Hattie, and they're going to be strapped to me in 2 seconds and I'm jumping off the plane with them. So that's my literal comfort blanket. And then my other one would probably be t-shirt, dresses. I just think when you're traveling, like we basically can't always presume that we're going to have a shower in the theater either. Like at the Opera House, we obviously have, you know, great, you know, we have showers and everything, we're very clean at the Opera House. But when we're in Japan or like Taiwan and the humidity, you just have to presume that when you step out of the hotel you're going to feel disgusting for the rest of the day. Then you do a show with makeup on without a shower, and then you'll probably go and eat afterwards. So you have to have stuff that you can chuck in a laundrette really quickly and not be precious about, and just long baggy t-shirt dresses. They're going to stick to you, and, you know, that's it. It's not a glamorous life.
It really isn't. It really isn't. But when you do have glamorous moments, so let's say, like for the premiere of Cats or something, when you if you want a birthday suit, what would you wear? What would be the outfit or the dress that would make you feel $1 million?
I mean, I think it would honestly be, I actually wore white for the Cats premiere, gorgeous beaded, like white Miu Miu dress. But I think I would go with, like, I love, like, caftan sleeves. I feel like Frida Kahlo-esque, kind of with more bling. Like, I would, I don't know, something with big sleeves.
Caftans!
Like, I just love that kind of vibe. That's how I think I'm going to grow old, just in, like, lots of gold jewellery and big embroidered caftans, like, with kimono-esque sleeves.
But you will be drowning in fabric because you're so petite and delicate. Caftans, you'd disappear inside them. They'd be wearing you, Frankie.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd maybe, like, fit them to my waist or something. You'd be able to see my waist, and I just feel quite fabulous.
Okay, so you love kind of texture and prints and quite bold colours when you're not wearing black?
No.
Okay, so what colour are these caftans going to be, for God's sake?
Okay, let me change it. Maybe more kimonos, like big sort of like kimono-esque kind of gown.
Okay, so you want to disappear entirely inside your kimono.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to see my neck and my my head and my wrist.
You're flipping insane.
And then just nothing else.
That is just the weirdest thing I have ever heard. 28-year-old, beautiful girl with a kind of like the perfect creature wants to obliterate herself inside a kimono, all being they are the most beautiful things, but not for you. You're insane.
You're funny. Okay, maybe when I get to that point, I'll consult you for style advice. I kind of drawn towards men's clothes as well, unfortunately.
But I think that's good for you.
So yeah. Maybe if I can find a more chic version.
But I think that's really nice. I think that women who are very feminine in themselves and the way they carry themselves and what their features look much better in androgynous clothes than women who are already quite athletic and masculine in their build. What's the most you've ever spent on an item of clothing?
I can't even think. I've had lots of guilty
okay,
moments.
What's the, okay, come on, spit it. I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours.
I'm trying to
mine
think.
Is really bad. Okay, I'll tell you
yours first.
I'm actually really ashamed about this. But I was when I was pregnant, okay? I was heavily pregnant, and so I couldn't buy anything. And it was at the times when Trini and I, I'll be honest, we were making shitloads of money then. And so I went into Prada, and there was this scarf, because I couldn't fit into anything because I was so fat and pregnant. There was this scarf, this ermine scarf. Okay, I think it was like reconstituted, you know, it was vintage and it was taken and remade, the scarf on the sweater. And I hope my husband can't hear this, but it was I think it was about, just for a scarf, okay, guess how much a scarf was, how much I paid for a scarf from Prada.
Thousands from Prada. Thousand. Okay.
£3,000.
Okay. That is crazy. I'm hoping that was like
what
pregnancy hormones.
What the fuck was I thinking? And now I don't want to wear it because I look at it and I'm thinking, oh, those poor little baby, you know, little animals. And but yeah, so that was that's my guilty secret. So now tell me yours. Oh, and I bought a baby's hat for my son when he was like a floral one, poor Joe. I was trying to turn him gay. And I bought him a little bonnet, which I think cost just a little cotton bonnet in a Liberty print, and I think that cost about £140. That's my other, yeah, and I told my husband that it cost £5 from Gap. Okay, so now you can share. Now you can share, tell me.
Okay, I think the worst was probably the my Bottega Veneta handbag.
Okay.
And I went into the store and it was like that they was like that there's then they don't exist, but there might be one being made in Milan, they said, so if you pay for it now it's yours, because the waiting list was like, you know, 500 people. And I came in looking so horribly scruffy. I was even ashamed to walk in as I did. And then I think they just realized that I was genuinely just a nice girl that was like, you know, not going to be annoying. I was just discreetly asking. And so they kind of like, okay, we'll help you out here. So yeah, I paid a lot for that. But I wear it every day, to be fair.
Okay. So was that more than a secondhand car?
I think it was only £2,000.
Okay, that's quite a lot for a bag. So, but you're right. But that is that's an investment. I think bags are investments. It'll last you forever. And if you ever one day have children, that's something, and you have a daughter or a boy like mine who I tried to turn gay, you can pass on your bags. All right, my darling. Well, it's been so lovely to talk to you. And I wish we could talk more about ballet because I've got so many questions I want to ask you. And
well, please, I'm going to make sure you're invited as soon as we're
open. Oh, yeah, I would love to.
And I'm on stage.
Yeah, I bet you're missing it so much. And hopefully, fingers crossed, you'll get back there soon. But you're gorgeous, Frankie. Thank you so much. It's been really lovely to talk to you.
Such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.